suggested that I go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I started out going to all different types of meetings, right? And there was this one meeting that I was going to in Westport. It was a men's Big Book step study meeting. And there was one guy that kind of had an idea of what to do. And in the other meetings, nobody really knew what to do. It's, you know, at least that's how it seemed to me at the time. So I'm very grateful for the Big Book step study process. It saved my life. So in the beginning, my alcoholism, it kind of, I didn't know it was there, but as far back as I can remember being 4 years old and being at a family party. And I think it was a Halloween party, and like it was at my aunt's house, and she had all kinds of games set up for all the kids, right? And so all the kids would be playing like bobbing for apples or whatever else, pinatas, whatever. And all the adults were walking around with these funny shaped little glasses, and like they seemed like they were having a good time. And I kind of wanted to be like them. So I asked them what they were drinking. They said champagne. And I said, can I have some? And they said, yeah. And they gave me a snifter full of ginger ale. I never knew the difference. I thought that was my first experience with alcohol. And I thought it was pretty cool. And I go from 4 to 7 years old. And I end up getting a sore throat. And my old man's a drinker. And he gives me Mr. Boston's Blackberry Brandy. He gives me a shot of that for a sore throat at 7 years old. 10 years old, my grandfather is a golf instructor at New Bedford Whaling City Golf Club, and I was taking lessons with him, and he didn't drink, but he had a lot of friends that used to hang out in the clubhouse after. So I'd go in with him at 10 years old. I'd be in the clubhouse, and all the men were sitting there drinking beer and laughing and having a good time, and I wanted to be like those guys. I get to high school, 13 years old, and I had made friends with this kid, and he wanted to know if I wanted to hang out with him for the weekend, spend the weekend at his house and go fishing. So I said, yeah. So, you know, we started hanging out. We went fishing. Next thing I know, we're back at the house, clean the fish, get the meat from the fish. And he's like, hey, let's go for a walk. We go through the woods. We come to this other kid's house that we know from school, and the garage door is just open. There's nobody around. And my friend runs inside the house, runs out with the kid's mother chasing him with a broom, and says, come on, let's go. And he's got a bottle of peppermint schnapps under his coat. Now, he took a sip and decided he didn't really like it. And then he gave it to me, and I took a sip, and I decided I didn't really like the taste of that neither, but I drank that whole bottle. And I didn't know it at the time, but what that was the phenomenon of craving taking hold of me. And I didn't know it, I didn't understand it, but I do now. And I didn't find that out until I got here and read this chapter. The phenomenon of craving, like it says, it takes place after you put after I put this substance in me. It's like a switch that gets clicked and it just says, keep sending more. Like, I like the effect. It says in here that we drink because we like the effect. I don't like the taste of booze. I never did. I don't like the way it burns when it goes down. And I used to drink towards the end. When I quit drinking, I could drink a 1.75 liter bottle of Seagram 7 in a 24-hour period. I was drinking 16-ounce water glasses of the stuff with no chaser. And just chugging those glasses down like a beer, and I couldn't even get drunk anymore. I would be disappointed, and 3 minutes later I would be passed out. But this phenomenon of craving, you know, no matter how far I am away from a drink, it can happen to me. So I have to be careful, you know. In the beginning, I thought it was ridiculous. I used to hear people in these halls talk about how they read labels on things that were not alcoholic, but just, you know, different things, mustard, all different things. But I believe them now. A month ago, on April 14th, It was my sobriety date, and it was my 3-year anniversary, 3 years sober. I got married on that day as well. The day before that, on April 13th, my grandfather passed away. He was my only living grandparent, and I really wanted him to be at the wedding, and he didn't make it. When he was in the hospital, he was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and me and my wife had gone down to the cafeteria to grab some lunch. We had been there with the whole family hours on end, and I didn't think anything of it. It was the hospital cafeteria. I grabbed an iced tea off the shelf in the refrigerator. We get to the table. I take the lid off, and I take a sip, and I'm like, ooh, that tastes funny. So I read all the ingredients. It doesn't say that there's alcohol in it. I didn't really like it, but I took another sip, and I'm like, yeah, it still tastes funny. So I took a couple more sips, and I'm like, it's got to be in here. I turn the label a little bit. It says less than 0.5% of alcohol, less than 0.5% alcohol. I put the cap back on. I gave the rest to my wife, and I went and rinsed my mouth out. I felt the effect of that little tiny bit of alcohol. I felt it go through my body like a wave, and that was the phenomenon of craving. It almost had me. So now I believe in reading labels, because I know how dangerous this stuff is for me. It's poison. It's poison, and it'll just run away with me, I ended up finding out about the Big Book Step Study. It talks in here that this whole chapter is dedicated to a doctor saying that alcoholics tend to, the altruistic movement tends to have more success with alcoholics than doctors do. I willingly admitted myself in the end, though I didn't quit drinking yet, I had started my journey towards recovery. I admitted myself in the psychiatric unit at a hospital, and I thought for sure that one night in the psychiatric unit, I don't want to come back here. I think I'm not going to drink no more. And, it only kept me sober for like a day or two, day and a half. But I ended up meeting a caseworker there, a social worker, and he suggested that I go to an outpatient program, because I didn't know what to do. That's why I went to the hospital. I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know where the meetings were. I just knew I didn't want to live that way anymore. And so this social worker was like, I want you to, there's this program called ADCARE. You might want to try it. So I went to ADCARE, and I was still drinking after leaving ADCARE, and I couldn't figure this out. I'm doing the program, I'm doing what they tell me to do, I'm doing crossword puzzles, and I'm writing notes to alcohol about how much I hate it and I don't want to drink it anymore. And I couldn't figure out why am I drinking when I'm doing what they tell me to do. So I'm sitting there, right? I got ripped jeans, I got a beat up old Harley Davidson hat, and I got a ripped shirt, and I got a bad attitude, and I'm sitting in the corner of the room. And the guy that's running the meeting, he's an older gentleman, and he asked me, he says, hey you, he says, you don't look like you're having fun. I said, I'm not. He said, when's the last time you had fun? I said, I don't remember. He said, well, don't you have any friends? I said, I fucking hate people. I don't like anybody. And he said, have you ever been to an AA meeting before? And I said, no. And he said, why not? I said, I don't know where they are. And there was a guy sitting in that room, right? And he said, I know where there's a meeting called a Men's Big Book Step Study meeting. He said, I go there on Wednesday nights. It's in Westport. It's like it's a small group. He said, there's not that many people. And I said, good, because I fucking hate people. But I'm willing to try this if I can get my social worker to let me leave this program on Wednesday nights to go there. So I got my beginning in the Big Book Step Study that way, it was like, God just picked me up and was like, nope, this one's going here, So, you know, I met a guy there, and he gave me a lot of suggestions that I didn't take in the beginning, but I'm glad that I did. You know, another thing that sticks out about the powerlessness, right? Because the first half, it reads, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and all of these things that I'm telling you about, it was my powerlessness. You know, drinking 16-ounce water glasses of whiskey, who does that? There's probably alcoholics that don't do that, you know? That's pretty bad. And the worst part was, is I would pour that drink and I would stare at it for an hour not wanting to take it. Not wanting to take it. Like the guy, you know, hidden in a deserted barn, right? Sitting in my room with a bottle and a glass and the shades down, no TV on, just sitting in the dark by myself. Nobody wants to talk to me and I just want to die. I don't want to talk to anybody, don't like anybody, I just want to die. You know, and I didn't want to take those drinks. I got to a point where I couldn't stop. I would pour the drink, I would stare at it for an hour, and then I would take it. Just didn't want to take it. I'd always end up taking it. I was going out with a girl I was living in Dartmouth at the time. She was living in Fall River. I ended up moving in with her. I got hurt at work. I was on crutches for a week. She was like, I had a red Chevy Monte Carlo at the time. She was like, you know, I like your car. Can I take it to work with me this week? But I know what she was trying to do. She was trying to help me by not, you know, if I didn't have wheels, where was I going? I was on crutches. I was so powerless over alcohol. I walked a mile on crutches to the liquor store to go get booze. And I walked a mile back to the house. And in the end, she was in the medical field, and she knew I needed help. In the end, you know, it was Thanksgiving morning on 2012, before we did it, went to go see family or anything. She decided that we weren't going to be together anymore. And, you know, she looked me in the eye and she said, you know why this happened? And she's like, you know, you're an alcoholic, you need professional help. And I said, I don't need help, I can quit if I want to. And for 3 more years, I tried. I tried to quit just to smite her, and I couldn't do it. I'd get a week, sometimes I'd get 2 weeks, but I don't think I ever got more than 2 weeks, and most of the time I couldn't get more than a day. And I tried that for 3 years, and there was just no getting anywhere on my own. So, that being said, you know, I had to admit my powerless over alcohol. My sponsor had given me the suggestions when I met him. The first suggestion he gave me was getting on my knees and asking God of my own understanding to keep me away from a drink and a drug for a day. Now, I had an agnostic temperament. I didn't think that God was going to be the thing that was going to help me. So I told my sponsor for 25 days that I was doing this. And I wasn't doing it. And after 25 days, I picked up again. Picked up another drink again. And then I decided that maybe I might want to try it. And I did. You know, I got on my knees. I asked God to keep me away from a drink and a drug on April 14th, 2015. And I haven't had a drink or a drug since. So I had to, I had to ask a higher power, a God of my own understanding, because I was completely powerless and I couldn't do this on my own. And I thought for a long time that I could, you know. And I tried going to psychiatrists for this too. That's another thing I wanted to point out. I tried going to see counselors and psychiatrists about this. And most of the time when I went to go see them, I was drunk while I was in their office and I wasn't being honest with them. And there were a lot of things that I knew I had to talk about and I wouldn't talk to them about it. And it talks about that in this chapter. And my family couldn't do anything to help me neither. You know, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Frothy emotional appeal is what families tell loved ones to try to get them to stop drinking. You know, I had a lot of people trying to help me in my family, and it just wasn't happening. And You know, I used to go see this, I went to multiple psychologists. You know, the last one I liked because she was a cute redhead Irish girl. And that's why I was going there, you know. One of these days I was going to walk out of the office with her, you know. And that never happened. And I also, you know, she wasn't able to really do anything to help me. So I was doomed, and I needed this program, you know, and I'm very, very grateful for this program. I have a really good life today. You know, I took the suggestions my sponsor gave me. I did this work, and I continue to try to practice doing this work, and I don't do this perfectly. Sometimes I take my will back willingly and pay for it, really pay for it, you know, but today, you know, I'm married to my wife, who I love very much. You know, my the last vehicle that I bought while I was still drinking, you know, pretty much rotted until it couldn't be driven anymore. And the new vehicle that I have, you know, I wrote a 5-figure check, which I thought hell froze over when I did that, and I paid for it. I have no payment, you know. I have my own place. The rent gets paid, which, you know, things like that weren't happening for me before. And I'm grateful to be here tonight with all of you guys, my fellow alcoholics. I'm a lucky alcoholic, and that's some of my experience. Thanks.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Rich. Thank you very much. I'm going to pass this basket.